Let me ask you a couple of questions, Kent, just to kind of see the foundation here. What did you do business wise in 2015? And you don't need to give me an exact answer; just give me a ballpark.
Yeah, it was close to 900. It was about a little bit less than what I had done the year before.
Okay, in 14 you did 954.
Right.
So roughly 950, you think?
Yeah, roughly 950 in 2014. And then in 2015, Rob, would have been about 900, just shy of 900.
Okay. All right. Where are you annualized this year?
Annualizing, I'm in about 875.
And what about assets? How many? What do you got in assets?
89 million.
Okay. And number of households?
Let's take a look there. Here we go. No. Rob, I know where it is, and I'm under pressure here. I can't seem to find it.
All right. Well, if you could email me when sometime after this over and tell me the number of households and the number of butlers that you have, that would be helpful.
Okay.
The last time we talked, your minimum was 250. Have you changed that?
I have not.
All right. Any structural changes in your practice? A new sales assistant? Anything new there?
As far as a team, no. I've been with my new sales assistant for about a year. I think maybe. She helped me while I was with you, where I was transitioning over to her. I would say a relatively new sales assistant.
What's her name?
Shannon.
All right.
Shannon Mountain.
It's Carlos.
Yes.
Okay. What's Shannon's last name?
Mountain, just like the regular mountain.
I've never seen that as a last name.
I hadn't either. I mentioned that to her too. I said it's not a weird last name, but it's an unusual.
I thought for the first. I went to Publix to pick up something the other day, and the checkout lady's name or girl, she's probably high school, was Whisper. I'd never heard that as a first name. Whisper.
Yeah.
What were they
smoking?
All right. There's a lot of kids, young kids in Tennessee named Peyton, all after Peyton Manning.
Peyton Manning, right.
All right, what's working, Kent? As you look at your practice right now, tell me what's working. What makes you feel good about your practice? I think you know the question I'm asking you.
What's working is I've done a good job of setting up with my top clients, well, all my clients. What's working is that I am consistent with my calls on a monthly basis. And Shannon sends out reminder emails, and I'm always on time, and So I'm talking to clients. I know what I'm going to talk to them about, and I am seeing new assets come in from my clients, and I'm just solidifying and building those relationships with clients. So that's what's working is the fact that it's consistent. It's every month, and I'm consistent with it, and Shannon is consistent with sending them email reminders. And we're flexible if they need to reschedule, we reschedule with them. But I am proactively contacting my clients, which is the number one source of satisfaction, I believe.
All right. Are you losing many clients?
I haven't lost any until Friday. Friday the 13th, I lost one.
What size?
650,000.
All right, and you know why?
I don't know why. I think I know why. There's a couple of reasons. I think that, first of all, he lives in Florida, and I've never met him.
Yeah.
We've never met face to face, so there's one thing. Secondarily, people who have been conservative or moderately conservative, the performance numbers just are not that great, Rob. I mean, bonds are not paying a whole lot, and conservative portfolios just are not growing that much. And so, I had recommended a couple of mutual funds that didn't turn out. He's down a little bit. And I think some other financial advisor got a hold of him and said, you know what, I can do so much better for you, which we know. And he's never met me before. And I think the other thing, too, is that he's not really a good client. We did a financial plan for him. And, Rob, he's pretty much, I don't want to say obliterating, he's going beyond the limits of the plan. He's taking out far more than we told him he could take out. And maybe I haven't been forceful enough in reminding him about that. So I think it's a combination of having never met me. The performance is not what he thinks it is, and somebody else has gotten a hold of him, and he's going through it faster than he ought to be.
It's always harder to hold on to somebody who you can't see. Doesn't sound like you lost a lot of sleep over this one.
I did. I've lost a lot of sleep. This has been the worst weekend I've had since the beginning of the year. And the reason that I lost a lot of sleep is that his name is Harvey. I started working with Harvey's brother, Steve, probably 20 years ago. Steve lived here in Las Vegas. Steve now lives in Connecticut. Steve has a twin sister by the name of Sally who lives in California. And Harvey lives in Florida. Because of my relationship with Steve, when Mom died and everybody got a good chunk of cash, Sally, Steve's twin sister, and Harvey, his brother, both came with me at Steve's recommendation. And so I've met Steve, I've met Sally, I've been to her house in California. I've never met Harvey. But these three are close. If I tell something to one of them, within a half an hour, all three of them have that same information. They speak frequently. They vacation together constantly. If they don't speak every day, they certainly speak two or three times during the week. And you can't tell one of them anything without the other one knowing it again within 30 minutes. And so when I got the transfer paper, which was very disturbing to me, that he didn't call me beforehand or didn't give me any inkling. I just saw it on the system. I immediately tried to call him. He didn't answer the phone. So I immediately tried to call Steve. He didn't answer the phone. And then I called Sally, and I spoke to her. And she just said, well, Harvey just felt like he needed somebody locally, somebody he could sit down with. And I said, well, you know, how are you and I doing? Because she plays golf with some of her friends, and she's told me before that some of her friends chide her, why are you dealing with a financial advisor in Las Vegas and you live here in California? But the talk that she and I had on Friday, she seemed fine. She didn't act as though she was going to be moving her account. And so then I finally got a hold of Steve, and he seemed fine too, but then he started asking me some very penetrating questions about performance that he's never asked me before. But then by the end of the conversation, he said, Kent, I've been with you for 25 years. You don't need to worry. I'm not going to be going anywhere. So, yeah, I've lost some sleep on it because of his relationship with, and Steve has well over $1.5 million, and Sally has about $3 million. So you're talking about $4.5 million, nearly $5 million that could be affected by Harvey.
Yeah, I understand. What were some of the penetrating questions that Steve was asking, performance questions?
He was saying, if you told me based on the financial plan that I could pull out about 4% a year, why do our, you know, well, what's the yield on our dividend paying stocks? And I said, well, they're about 2.5%. He said, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why aren't we buying higher yielding paying dividends? And some of the stocks my mother had, shouldn't we have kept some of those? And, you know, why am I reinvesting? You know, why don't I just take that money out? Those were that was the gist of his questions.
Yeah, you know what you might want to, if people have a choice, and I know this is going to sound repetitive to you because it is, if you went to Steve and said, what's going to change your life more if these assets double or they get cut in half? The answer is going to be his life would change more if they got cut in half, correct?
You're absolutely right. That's a great question, by the way.
Yeah, and the, you know, everybody wants to be more aggressive in hindsight, usually. Because over a period of time, being in equities has the best return. But to get those returns, you've got to be there from the beginning to the end. Can't be trying to time the market. And most people, if they have too much risk, panic and get out of the market and then have to time getting back in. So if you've got the right asset allocation, you're going to stay there during the good and the bad times. You're not going to panic and run. And the best example, my mom's account, going back to the crash of 87, when the market was down 23% in 3 days, she was 40, 50, 10, and she was down 7%. So she was around for the next 15 years of a bull market, basically.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's, you got to take it back to the, you know, you got to get back to the basics. If someone wants to, someone's got to understand, a client's got to understand why you are conservative. My guess is you're conservative because that's what their financial plan or their risk tolerance says, correct?
Absolutely, right. We go through that.
In a case like this, maybe the response would be if it happened again, I hear your questions. They're good questions. Do we need to take another look at your risk tolerance? And now you're really talking about the important things. Well, no, I don't want to take a lot of risk. Well, that's what you've told me in the past. That's why we have not taken as much risk as we could have. So just to get into that performance game is dangerous. Going back and looking at the risk tolerance, revisiting the risk tolerance makes a lot of sense in my mind.
Yeah.
All right. Let me ask you a couple more questions. What's not working? I asked you what was working. You said you're doing a good job of keeping on track with your calls and you're prepared. What's not working?
The things that are not working is that I have zero prospects in my pipeline. the thing that's not working is I am not leveraging and utilize. I am not making contact with the CPAs of my clients who have said that I would give them a good endorsement. I'm not leveraging that. I'm not leveraging what you taught me in looking for things. You know, when somebody gives me a compliment, I'm not leveraging that to ask for an introduction. I have yet to sit down with my Southwest Airlines pilot and ask him to introduce me to other airline pilots. I have no prospects. The business is not growing through new. It's growing through assets coming in from existing clients, but I'm not picking up any new clients.
All right. Well, I pulled up a little bit of your file. When we talked on May the 11th, we were re-engaging, and I asked you some of the questions I've just asked you now. You said your assets were $82 million in 2015. You tell me they're $89 million now, almost a year later. Some of that's market. There's not a lot of growth there. What you're telling me is confirmed by the numbers. But what I think you find really interesting, I asked you what your top priority was. And you told me two things, growth and dealing with CPAs, which is what you're telling me now. So yep. here's the question. I remember the Southwest Airlines conversation. We talked a lot about when clients recognize value having conversations. So it's what I'm making up from all that is you know what you need to do, but you've been reluctant to execute on what you know. Is that too simple?
Am I nope.
Okay. So here's the question. Question I always used to hate to get from my dad. Why?
Do you really want the answer? I guess you do. You wouldn't have asked it. Why? It's all excuses. It's all mind games that I play with myself. I grew up pretty poor, Rob. I grew up on a chicken farm. I don't think my parents ever made more than $2,000 a year. And I find myself getting complacent. The home I live in, the way I live, is so far superior in many ways than what I thought I would ever have. And I think I get complacent. I think, well, I've done pretty good for myself. And if you look and saw where I came from, I have done pretty good. But I also have 9 children. And I need to be doing better. So there's a little bit of laziness and complacency on Kent Deaver's part. Doing the things, I'm treating this more like a job than I am a career. I'm 57 years old. I feel like I'm getting a little bit older. I've got a 13-year-old that's got learning disabilities and still wets the bed every night. I've got, you know, girls that are involved with guys that are... I play mind games with myself, and I tell myself I've got a lot going on, a lot more than a lot of people have going on. In January they asked me to the Mormon Church asked me to be a bishop, and it's a great honor to be asked to do that, but it's about a 20-hour-a-week job, and you don't get paid for it. But my religious beliefs will not allow me to say no. I would never said no to that. And so I play mind games with myself, and I go to bed too late, and I don't get up early enough, and I'm not as organized as I ought to be, and I'm not viewing this job as a career as much as I am a job. I mean, I've got. When I walk in the door on the first day of the month, I've probably got $65,000, $70,000 in production that's up, every month. And while that's good, it's not great, but I find myself saying, well, it's not too bad. We'll, you know, I'll work on that next month. So I have some issues growing up on a farm. I thought that anybody who grew up on a farm knew how to work, but sometimes I find myself to be lazy and complacent. And I guess those are the answers why. Sometimes I feel like maybe I don't want it badly enough to do what needs to be done. And then other days I do. I want it really badly. So
I'm going to hazard a guess. I think you may struggle with fear of rejection, wanting people to like you.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. You're absolutely right. I'm a pleaser. I want to be a peacemaker, and I want to be a pleaser. You're 100% right.
Yeah, but let me. I mean, this is off track, but it's something to think about. Do you know what codependence is?
Codependence? I've certainly heard the phrase. Yes.
It's basically, well, it's a complicated thing to describe, but it's basically trying to manage your image. You're nice to people, but you're nice because you want them to think that you're nice. You want people. It's a lot about image management, and a lot of it is subconscious, Kent. So you spend a lot of time. You don't want to get. I don't want to. I use the word pushy. I don't mean it pushy, but you'll get what I'm saying. You don't want to be pushy because you don't want people to think. You don't want to make people think less of you. You're a pushy guy. So it's. I think what you're and I struggle with it. That's why I can identify it. You're spending a lot of time. Somebody said to me once, advisors spend a lot of time worrying about what people think about them. And I think that's the case. You don't want to start referral conversations because you're worried, and I'm making this part up, because you're worried that they'll think your business is bad. Or you don't want to start referral conversations because you don't want to be rejected. Almost $900,000 puts what in your pocket? $320,000?
You know, with the bonuses and everything, the way UBS does it, well, I don't need to get into it. It puts about $350,000 in my pocket.
Okay, $350,000 is a good living. It's probably a better living in Tennessee, where I am, than it is in Las Vegas. But it's still a lot of money. It's easy to be complacent, and complacency is what some FAs struggle with. So let me ask you, why are you reengaging? If you know what to do, why are you wanting to reengage Supernova?
I really felt very unprepared for today's call. Told my wife, if I really want to make Supernova work for me, what I need to do is get the workbook out, read through that, which is the very first thing they tell you to do, and then I need to, and then I would be able to get the most out of Rob, and put forth some, and so I committed to her that was what I was going to do, and then. In my annual meeting with my manager, I told him he's very proud of the fact that I do Supernova. He's scratching his head why other financial advisors in the office are not doing it. I think I'm one of two, and I think the other one isn't even doing it that well. And so when he asked me about the coaching and does it work, and he sees the results, and he sees that I'm doing, I'm kind of hitting all the bogeys that he needs a financial advisor to hit for him as a manager. You know exactly what I mean by saying that.
I do.
So I'm one of his star pupils in many aspects. And so he offers to pay for the, he offers to pay for the coaching. And so I've got my wife putting pressure on me, and he's willing to pay for it, and I know that it's good, and so I, I like you. You're a therapist for me, and it's cheap and it's easy.
Why? What pressure is your wife putting on you, Kent?
Well, she said if Supernova works so good for you, and if you like Rob, she said, and Chuck is willing to pay for it. What in the world are you waiting for?
Well, she's right. She's right. All right. Here's why what you were saying a minute ago. You know, you need to get out the book and do all this on your own and all that to get the most out of it. If that were easy, I wouldn't have a job. We'd just print the book. You need someone to walk you through this and hold you accountable. I think from what you've told me and what I you know, we've known each other for a while now, is you need somebody to hold you accountable. If I were your if they called and said, okay, Rob, we want you to come out and take over Kent's office and be the manager, one of the things I would do is I would meet with you on a weekly basis and hold you accountable around the right things. You know what to do. Now I'm gonna paint a picture for you. I'm glad we started early, aren't you?
I'm thrilled. I'm glad we started early.
But I gotta be out of here right at the bottom of the hour as my 6-year-old grandson takes golf lessons and I gotta take him to golf.
Understood.
We have a friend. We had a couple who are friends of our family, new here in church here, and Anna's kind of like a second mother. Around 42 years old, and the husband committed suicide about 4 months
ago. Oh my!
Depression. And Brian's a great salesman, but the demons just got him. The demons just got him. He left $1.3 million in insurance.
Okay.
So Mindy, that's the wife's name, asked me to help her find someone to manage that money.
Sure.
And the insurance agent made the assumption he was going to be managing the money.
Mm.
And he made a presentation, and I met with, the three of us met. It was an awful presentation, just an awful presentation. Told me I'm not going to embellish anything. He told me he thought municipal bonds paid interest semiannually. He was pretty sure they did.
He was pretty sure.
And it was his proposal. This is a lady who works at a Christian school. She makes $25,000 a year. She's got two. They've got in the fourth and the seventh grade. And he put her into – he wanted her to put 600 plus – he wanted her to put about $800,000 in a fixed annuity.
Yeah.
Nice payday.
For him.
For him, yeah. I figured it all up. It was about $18,500 to $19,000.
And how old is she? How old is she?
42.
42. And the money's going into an annuity.
He wanted it to go into an annuity. And the annuity, he wanted to do an immediate, what do you call it? I didn't do much annuities. Where he was generating like $30,000 a year in income, but all he was doing was giving her money back.
Correct.
Internal rate of return was like 0.8.
Right.
But at the end of 5 years, all your money's gone. And when asked why he put it into that structure, he said, well, to defer taxes. And she's like in a 5% bracket. So here's my point. It was terrible.
Yeah.
People out there who really need your help, you've got to have a little of the. There was something going around the motivational talk circuits 15, 20 years ago. It was called the Bernie. You have to have a Bernie platform mentality, and what that is there was one of the oil platforms out in the ocean that are stories and stories and stories above the water caught on fire, and this one guy jumped off of the platform from however many stories up and lived to talk about it. And they said, well, why were you so brave to jump off that platform? And he says, I could burn to death or I could possibly survive this fall. That's the burning platform mentality. I really don't have a choice. I got to get outside my comfort zone. I don't want to jump down 600 feet or whatever it was, but it sure beats sure death. So you've got to have a little bit of that mentality here. You are an ethical man. You would drop out of the business before you would do something unethical to your advantage and against the client, right?
Yep.
You're ethical. You've got a great platform. You know what you're doing. There are a lot of people within 2-3 mile radius of where you are who would love to be your client. There are a lot of people out there. You know, FAs are always looking for folks who are unhappy at Merrill Lynch or whatever. I need to talk to some folks who are unhappy. Well, that'd be nice, but there are a lot of people out there who are happy with their advisor because they don't know what else is out there.
Hmm.
I've taught this, and I think I've started teaching this since we talked last. You talk to a prospect, and they say, well, I'm happy where I am. You've heard those exact words.
Absolutely.
I'm happy where I am. And the response to that is, well, I'm happy I'm glad you're happy where you are, but some of my best clients were happy where they were until they saw what I do.
Huh.
You see the difference?
Yep.
Somebody's happy. Maybe they're not. I mean, they just don't know they're not happy. So here it's going to get back to you've got to have a commitment to get outside of your comfort zone. One of the books. Did you order the Supernova book? You must have. I mean,
I sure did. I ordered them all.
Got that book by Larry Wilson called Play to Win. Did you read
yes.
it?
No, but I sure have it, and I know right where it is.
Well, I think it would be a good book for you to work your way through. Larry was an entertaining guy. I don't think it's something you'd read, reading while you're at the beach. But I think reading a little bit every day. But here it is. There's two ways to go through life. You can play to win, or you can play not to lose. Nobody likes rejection. Nobody likes humiliation. There are a lot of emotions that we as humans don't like. So if you play to avoid those emotions you don't like, that's playing not to lose. And when you win at playing not to lose, all you do is get temporary relief. Oh. Got through 2015. Oh no, I'm back at zero. You know, it's a job, as you described earlier. If you play to win, you open yourself up to those emotions nobody enjoys. Nobody, no matter what they say, likes rejection. That old thing of, well, I like getting rejection because that means I'm one call closer to a yes. That's BS. I had heard a guy once talking about he measures rejection, not because he. Yeah. So you've got to get out. You've got to open yourself up. Starting a referral conversation, Kent, may be uncomfortable. It probably is uncomfortable because you're not doing it on a regular basis. But when you play to win, the reward and win at that, the rewards are terrific. So I'm not a psychologist. I know psychologists, but I'm not a psychologist. You've got to get outside your comfort zone on a regular basis. If you walk out of the office at the end of the day and you can't say I got outside of my comfort zone for a portion of the day, you've probably not gotten as much out of the day as you could. You know that call, a bad call you got to make to somebody, and you keep putting it off, and you keep putting it off, and you keep putting it off, because you don't want to get outside your comfort zone. So you have that hanging over your head all day. I got to make this call. It drains your battery. By the end of the day, you put in a call, you get voicemail. I'll call them again tomorrow. Just you got to get outside your comfort zone and get things done. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely.
So. You just told me that the relationship you lost on Friday, and to me, the story is how long did you have Harvey?
Maybe a year and a half. A little over a year.
Yeah. It's not a surprise when you lose an account that you've never met. When you have you structured a portfolio that is not going to be at the vanguard of an up market. You just that's didn't have them very long as a client, didn't know them, and in a market that doesn't really it's not set up for the way you manage money. No surprise you lost it. So you've lost an account. It's the first one in a long time. So what I make up from that is you've got a lot of people in your practice who really like you. And I know I've had this conversation with you before. If they didn't like you, Kent, they would leave. ACATs fly all over this country. They'd leave. So these people want to help you. You've got to let them help you. What you're doing is you're trying to help people. It gets back to the reason I told you that story about the insurance agent who proposed all of these annuities. You've got to save people from people like that. We got to mark. I don't know which way the next 2,000 points in the Dow Jones is going to be. My guess is down, but I've thought that for a while. There's going to be a time when people are going to need to have the right asset allocation, to have the right risk tolerance. There are a lot of people out there who don't even know what an asset allocation is. I'm talking about clients.
Right.
So the key here is getting in front of people. I bet when you get in front of people, prospective clients, I would bet that you do pretty well. Am I right?
I think so, yes.
Land in the business. You just got to get more appointments. I mean, it's no more complicated than that. You have to get in front of more people. Now, when's the last time we went over something that, and I'm gonna send it to you. Bear with me a second. You will have seen this before, but I think this would be a good starting point. Let's see. There it is. All you do is put in K-E-N, and up you pop. Let's see. Okay, I work off a satellite. It's going to take a minute for this to get to you. Are you by your desktop?
Yes, sir.
It's still in my outbox. It takes a while. What I'm sending you is a form. There, it should be there.
Just got it, Rob.
Is that amazing? I mean, really, think about that. Franklin, Tennessee. You're in Las Vegas. And in 15 seconds, it's just I'm amazed. I'm amazed.
Yeah, I
haven't
figured
out the light bulb yet. Okay. look at this thing. You've seen this, right?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Here is what I think makes a lot of sense. Just to get the thought process started, take your top 20 clients and answer those questions specifically for each client. Let's just do one. Give me the name of a client you really like. Does business, follows your advice, he's friendly, whatever. What's his first name?
Bill.
Okay. Answer number one for Bill.
Introduced by a relative. Oh, let's see. I guess I knew him socially or personally before he became a client.
Okay. Number two.
More than 10 years.
Number three.
Kind of in the process of updating it.
What does that mean, kind of in the process?
We've done some planning for him, but he just sold his business. He just sold his business. He's going to receive about $20 million in October, and so we're going over that with him.
Okay. Just as an aside, is when somebody sells a business, it hits a lot of radar screens.
Right.
He's going to get called on by a lot of people.
Yes.
Is there anything that has that news gone public yet?
Yes.
Do you sense he's getting calls?
Well, he gets calls all the time anyway because they own a local casino here, so. He's been getting calls, and
is there anybody at UBS you need to get in front of him? Do you need to get how old is Bill?
Bill is 65, 66.
I know you're going through the estate planning, but is his will in order?
That's what that's one of the questions I've put to him.
Okay. All right. Well, does he have an estate planning attorney?
He does.
Okay. All right. Good. Well, let's keep going here. Number four. You just answered that. Well, maybe you haven't. What's number four?
I am not his only advisor.
Who's your competition?
Competition is a couple of guys. When he originally built his hotel years ago, he went to he needed $100 million. And he went to everybody, and the only person who said yes was Deutsche Bank.
Yeah.
And he's a loyal guy, and so two of their private wealth guys, he opened up an account with them. He has about $4 million with me. He has $9 million with them. They recently, in the last year or so, left Deutsche Bank and went to a little boutique firm. So he has them and he has me. We've all talked together before and kind of strategized together, but he's as loyal to them as he is to me.
Okay, so they'll know about this $20 million also.
Absolutely.
Okay. Where did they go? Do you remember the name of the firm?
I don't. It's a firm I've never heard of. It was a little boutique firm.
Okay. All right. Be fun to discuss sometimes what a boutique firm is, how that's different from what you do, but that's a different story. All right. The answer is not much. it's just all marketing. The status, you've answered number five. What about number six?
I think he would describe me as a financial advisor, maybe a financial planner, probably a broker. I think those are how he would describe me.
But if he could only pick one?
If he could only pick one, he'd probably say financial advisor.
Good. All right. Number seven.
No.
Have you asked for? Have you started a referral conversation in the last month? In the last 12 months?
Well, I can't say that. He did. We were doing some. He and his partner never had a buy-sell agreement between the two. And so I brought in somebody from UBS who had a unique way of explaining what he does and what we can do for him. And I've known Bill for over 20 years, and he and I had a conversation about referrals a few years back, and I asked him to refer me or introduce me to his partner. And his response to me was, my partner has a financial advisor that he likes just as much as I like you, and he's as loyal to him as I am to you. And he said, if he came to me and tried to introduce me to his financial advisor, I wouldn't even entertain it, so I'm not going to ask him to do the same thing.
Yeah.
So that was a few years ago. But when we came in and started talking about the importance of a buy-sell agreement, then I did get in front of his partner, which I never, ever have before. And so we were really talking about a buy-sell agreement between the two of them. It was moving along swimmingly. I mean, it couldn't have been moving along better. And then somebody comes in and says, we want to buy your company, and it was the right price. And all of that fell out of bed because you don't need a buy-sell agreement in that particular situation. And so it has somewhat shifted, but the both of them have been grateful for the work that we did do and the kind of the path we were on, but that path no longer exists.
All right. Are you scheduled once a month? Let's see. I mean, how are you scheduled right now with me? I'm looking here.
Yeah, we're once a month.
Okay, you're the third Tuesday, of the month. I want to give you some homework, and then I want you to call. See, here's I'm interrupting myself. That's bad. I'm going to give you some homework. When you get through that homework, I don't want to wait a month to talk about it.
Okay.
You'll send me an email, say, Rob, I got it done, and we'll just spend 15 minutes,
between. Oh, okay.
All right. I want you to go through that form I just sent you with each of your clients.
Each or the top 20?
Top 20, I'm sorry. And I want you to after you've done that, I want you to take a hard look at it and see what jumps out at you. For example, if you looked at your top 20 and 15 of them, I'm making it up, they were referred to you by a CPA, that would tell a story. So I'm looking for stories here. If you look down at number 5 and 15 of those people don't have an updated will, that tells a story. If 18 of the people had been with you more than 10 years, that tells a terrific story. So I just want you to each one of them on each of your 20. I want you to do it and then look at them in total and see what your top 20 clients are telling you.
Okay?
Okay. Right. Now, here's the other thing, and you touched on it a minute ago. We talked about clients recognizing value. That's the Bill Cates BIPSA thing. When clients add value,
right.
That's got to be reactive. Let's think about this let's think about this in a different way. I want to do something where you're totally in control of the activity. What is your favorite niche? What's the best niche in your practice?
Who?
Retirees, doctors, lawyers. Crap dealers, whatever.
Let's go with retirees.
Okay. Here's what I would like you to do. I would like for you to have 4 niche expansion conversations with with retirees. And I'm going to go through it. You'll remember it, so we won't have to spend a lot of time on it because I got to go in 6 minutes.
Right.
The remember, it starts with advice. Think of one good retiree relationship you have. Give me a first name.
Larry Schiffman. Larry.
Larry. Larry, do you have a minute to give me some advice? And Ken, all this is recorded. You can go back and, as you know, you can go back and listen to it if you need. Larry, do you have a minute to give me some advice? Ken, I would be happy to give you some advice. What do you need? Larry, I would like to add more retirees to my practice. And then, Kent, you got to have three reasons that you enjoy dealing with that niche. And I'll just make these up for in to keep the conversation going. I'd like to add more retirees to my practice. You all retirees need my advice and follow my advice. It's very easy to communicate with retirees, and it's I can't think of what the third one would be. I'm under pressure now. So you go. I want to have more. Larry, do you have a minute to give me some advice? Yes. I would like to add more retirees to my practice, and then you give the three reasons. Here's the part, Larry. If you were me, how would you go about getting in front of more retirees? You remember that script?
Yeah.
Okay. How many retirees you got in your practice?
Oh, probably the majority.
Okay. I want you to go to the four relationships that you think you're the tightest with, and I want you to have that conversation. I'm not asking you to go to I did this with somebody the other day, and I said, give me the toughest person in this niche, give me the easiest person, and I asked him to make calls to each of them. But for you, I want you to pick the top your four really good relationships, and I want you to have a niche expansion conversation.
Okay.
And if they say, gosh, I can't think of anybody right now, your response is, Larry, thank you for thinking about it. Just know I'm never too busy to help people like you.
Okay.
Well, again, it sounds to me like you're asking for a referral. You caught me, Larry. There are a lot of people out there that need what I do. There are a lot of people out there who don't have the tools that I have to help people navigate the volatility that's been in the market and is, I think, going to be with us for a long time. I just like to get in front of a few people and make sure they don't make the mistakes that I've seen people make in the past. You know what I'm saying. This is my speak, not yours.
Right.
So I want you to have those 20 I want you to get those 20 clients, and I want you to look at them, and I want you to tell me the story it tells you. And then I want you to have four niche expansion conversations.
Okay.
And that's going to be outside your comfort zone.
Yes, it is. So real quick, I know you got to go in 3 minutes. Number one, do you have some minute to give me some advice? I want to add more retirees. I'm going to give them three reasons.
Yep.
If you were me, how would you go about getting more retirees? Is there a fourth? Do I?
They say, well, you know what? You really, I play golf every Monday with so and so who's retired. Your response is terrific. How would you recommend? If you were me, how would you go about getting in front of them? Because you know, when they say I'll have so and so call you, that call never comes.
No, never.
So when somebody says, well, yeah, Kent, you need to talk to so-and-so, your response, terrific. If you were me, how would you go about getting in front of them? If they say, I can't think of anybody right now, your response is, well, Larry, thank you for thinking about it. Just know I'm never too busy to help people like you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you might want to practice that a little. on an earlier call today, Kent, I'm going through a script, not this one, with somebody, and he tried to use my script, and it just wasn't him.
Yeah.
Stop. Just say what I'm saying, but put it in your words, and then it all went well. Same thing here. You know, you've got the script, you've got the bones, now you flesh it out.
Got it. Okay.
Kent, you know what to do. You've got to you when you called me and I asked you why you're reengaging. I mean, it's all you just, I don't want to use the word regurgitate, but I can't think of another one now. You went back and told me everything that we talked about in Supernova. You just haven't executed. You could be if you will consistently referral conversations, be looking for people who are recognizing your value. Getting into referral conversations with people who've been with you for 10 plus years and really like you, you're gonna do $1 million. I mean, I think it's gonna be hard not to do $1 million. Now I'm talking about market neutral. If the market goes down 25%, all you have to do is take advantage of the relationships. I don't mean take advantage in a negative way. But
right.
Leverage these relationships you have built. It's easy to describe. The execution is what's important. We're going to break it down into small steps, and I'm going to hold you accountable, hopefully in a polite, professional way.
Terrific.
All right. So when you get those 20 that information on those 20 clients, those 7 questions, and you've had 4. Niche expansion conversations with retirees, drop me an email and we'll spend 15 minutes and debrief on those things.
Sounds good.
All right.
Will do. Thank you.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks, Rob. Bye-bye.
Bye.